This is Gulf Coast Live Arts Edition from WGCU. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Imagine this situation. Classic horror film actor Bela Lugosi and the iconic musicians Adam Ant and Gary Numan are trapped inside a burning Notre Dame Cathedral with zombies. The situation seems hopeless until someone arrives to rescue them, and it's the members of the incomparable all-women new wave band The Go-Go's, on water skis, no less. That's just a taste of what you can experience through the new exhibition opening tonight at the Bob Rauschenberg Gallery at Florida Southwestern State College in Fort Myers. The show is a solo retrospective exhibition of the work of Miami-based artist and musician Beatriz Montevaro. Montevaro's work is distinctive for its densely drawn narrative images and environments. It's also distinctive for its representation of 80s pop culture, including English punk and new wave music icons, monster movies, science fiction, classic Disney, and much more. The show is titled Beatriz Montevaro Vacation, inspired by the Go-Go's hit song of the same name, and will include some never-before-exhibited pieces by Montevaro. And thanks to the efforts of Rauschenberg Gallery director and curator Jay Dellinger, tonight's exhibition opening will also include special music performance by Montevaro and Go-Go's rhythm guitarist and founding member Jane Wiedlin. I caught up with all three of them just hours after Montevaro and Wiedlin had met in person for the very first time, and as they were preparing to rehearse for tonight's opening reception performance. Let's hear that conversation now. Beatriz Montevaro, we're sitting here, and you're right next to Jane, and I know that you guys just met really recently, and clearly the Go-Go's have been really influential in your work, at least for a period. Can you tell me about just how today has been for you?
I was a lot more nervous than I thought I was going to be. I thought I was going to be super normal, and I was not super normal. And I had to apologize for my anxiety, and I think I cried a little. Yeah, that's the truth.
And so, Jane, I know you got this call from Jade about this art installation. Didn't know too much about Beatriz at that time, but I guess what's motivated you to come down and play this show and be part of this exhibition opening?
Well, it was about the most creative offer for a gig I've ever gotten, so I was really intrigued right away. And then when I looked at Betty's work, I was really thrilled with it. She's got a great brain, and she loves a bunch of the same stuff I do, and she's a weirdo, which is my favorite thing of all. So, I mean, that's like everything I love, so I was in right away.
All right, excellent. Did you guys talk before meeting today about what songs you might do at the opening?
Oh, well, we figured that out by email, but this is our first time, like, actually speaking with our vocal cords.
and Beatriz, can you just maybe take us back to the Beatriz you were at the time when you discovered the Go-Go's and, you know, these other folks from, you know, the new wave movement who were clearly influential?
I must have been around 12 when MTV was huge. I was fortunate that we had it in my house. And I, you know, loved it. And I guess there was the summer that the Vacation came out. My sister bought me a tape. I wore it out. I had already, like, sort of pretended to play drums a little bit with different friends. Got Beauty and the Beat that Christmas from, like, my great aunt or whatever. Had friends of mine back me up, like, in a lip-syncing show at a Halloween party. I went to Catholic school, and like my other like big thing was Adam Ant. It was Adam Ant and the Go-Go's. For Lent, I would give up listening to Adam Ant and Go-Go's music as like the most.
God, I love that. That's the hardest thing of all, right? Yes. That's awesome.
Like, I'm not religious now, but that's what I would do.
Well, tell me more about, I guess, your early upbringing, particularly as it pertains to art. And by that, I mean both visual art and music. Is there maybe one that you feel like you discovered first?
Like everyone draws when they're little, you know, with crayons and stuff. I just think I didn't stop. I don't think I really, you know, I didn't consider myself an artist or anything until maybe I went to like art school or just before that. But the music thing came out of play too. Like I had some friends that lived in South Dade that they would pretend to be Kiss. They had like the disco album, like Dynasty, and they would pretend to be Kiss. And I was over one day, and like everyone always wants to be, you know, Gene, because the bat is, you know, cool, like Batman. But Ralph took Gene. So I was like, well, I like cats. I'll be the cat guy, you know. And that's probably why I play drums, is because I like cats, you know. And so we would pretend to be Kiss. And then I bought the record so I could pretend at home by myself to practice for the next time we hung out, so I would be better at pretending to play drums. And then I had, later I had a neighbor who we would pretend to be in a band. And we actually had, like, the Go-Go's the Go-Go's Vacation Tour catalog that you could buy at the record store or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we would, like, we had our own fake band that we would make, like, our own pages, like, you know, our favorite color is, and, you know, whatever. And we would, you know, there was other, like, you know, like, there was a stick song that we would play to or whatever. We pretend to have band fights. It's hilarious. But it was, you know, like, play. And then my sister was like, you're doing this all the time, like, you're interested, so she bought me a drum set, and, you know.
I can't believe how influential your sister was.
No, she's, my sister is 14 years older than me, so she's, there's, like, a big gap, and she's all, I mean, she took me to, like, my Go-Go's, my first Go-Go show in 85, like, the mm-hmm. talk show. Show, and to my first Adamant show, the strip, which was the same year, I think. So yeah, so she's coming, I think. She's bringing my mom, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was listening to some Holly Hunt music. I found online some videos of shows you've done, and I know that you guys are really working with the Churchill pub scene and the Miami area, which has really grown. Like, there are local musicians who have been on my show who are here in Fort Myers, and when they've been able to play the Churchill pub, it's like a big deal.
I think the Miami music scene really is the best that I've seen anywhere, like, just traveling around the whole country. And I think part of it is the size. It's not too big. And, like, the noise people and the metal people and the punk people all go to each other's shows. Not all of them, but go to each other's shows and collaborate. And, like the music has, like, crossover. And there's, like, a lot of women in it, actually, too, like, compared to other cities of the same size. And there's different age groups there too. Like, one of, like, the figureheads, Rat Bastard, is, I think, I don't want to say how old he is, but he might get mad, but he's a little bit older. And Kenny Millions, who is, like, a kind of a famous jazz singer that does sort of noise now, like, pulls down his pants. I'm sorry if this is for the radio. He pulls down his pants and, like, insults people, like, sometimes with his saxophone. He's in his, like, in his late 70s, maybe, even. So there's a lot of, it's a real open scene, so it's cool.
Yeah, a lot of diversity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the you know, genre, I guess I would classify Holly Hunt in, it is very different from kind of the music I'm imagining you're going to be doing tomorrow with Jane. But then I've been listening to a lot of Go-Go stuff just over the course of this week, just thinking about today and thinking about it maybe more critically and realizing just how many of those songs are really kind of percussion driven.
Well, percussion is to music to, like, what black and white is to something. Like, the notes are all the color, you know? So, like, you need both of them. I mean, you can have a great track that's just rhythmic, but then it's more black and white. Like, you know, like the, and plus there, you can't really have, I guess you can. You can have hooks with rhythm, but you, like, the, I think they're more special with, you know, the chord progressions and the vocal melodies. It's so ridiculous, too.
Would you mind sharing with us maybe a song or two that you plan on performing during the opening, or do you want to keep that under wraps? It's fine if you do.
I'm okay. I was kind of kidding about it being secret.
Yeah, it's not. We're really doing the hits.
Yeah.
Well, the hits in one, like, not
my
a
favorite.
Hit.
My favorite song and plus the hits.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
And then we're going to do a jazz set.
Kind of putting the focus back a bit on your visual art, you know, one of the things that we've noticed is that you have multiple pieces that come together and tell a chronological narrative. And sometimes that narrative is, you know, the Go-Go's rescuing Bela Lugosi and Adam Ant from, you know, zombies as they're in the...
Sadly, Bela Lugosi didn't live, so we tried to rescue him.
Spoiler alert.
And it's all true, right?
Yes, it's all true.
I'm curious if when you start a piece like that that's going to be part of a chronological narrative, do you know that on the outset? Like, do you, when you're starting the first one, or does it just kind of... And I guess if you do know that, do you then plan out what the next panel is going to be?
I don't know. Probably it's different every time. Depends. Sometimes I'll start doing something, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, that's what I meant to do. And then sometimes I have an idea of what I'm going to do it, and I execute it. But I think creation is very mysterious sometimes, you know, when it's, like, allowed to happen.
Well, Jade Dellinger, you've kind of been the driving force behind making this happen, and I'm curious about kind of what put the idea in your head to even... I guess even reach out to these two and be like, hey, let's do this.
Well, I've always been a Go-Go's fan, one, but also that's something that I think Beatrice and I had in common. That said, I've also been a big fan of Beatrice's work for the last couple of decades, since first sort of discovering it and probably doing a studio visit with her more than 15 years ago. So the first exhibition that I actually curated down in Miami, Beatrice was very much a part of. And actually the focus at that point in time was about this sort of narrative that included Adam Ant. And so we included Beatrice's work about Adam Ant. And in that instance, we managed to get some drawings by Adam Ant. So as we began to discuss this exhibition, and it became clear that kind of the focus would be some of the work of that period, and of course the Go-Go's as the sort of heroes, heroines of this story, Beatrice also had pulled out some work that is sort of sculptural and kind of architectural, and we had this thought that, which is very connected to the work, that this comic or this zine would essentially come to life. You'd become immersed in it, as people will discover as they can sort of pass through. And it occurred to us that wouldn't it be interesting to have some of the characters come off the page, essentially? So on a lark, and with Beatrice's permission, I reached out to Jane, not expecting at all that she would respond, much less agree and be enthusiastic about it. But she was incredible about being willing and interested. And so we're just thrilled that she's here. And also, again, one of these heroes kind of comes to life through the exhibition. So... Mm-hmm.
What would you say it is that I guess has stuck with you about Beatrice's art after, you know, first working with her all these years ago and thinking, let's make this happen now?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, she's shown internationally, so she's had exhibitions all over the world and been represented by, you know, some prominent art galleries. And she has a kind of collector base of people that have been supporting and collecting her work for quite a number of years as well. And I must say, I was very fortunate when I made the project with her 15 years ago that I managed to acquire. She gifted work that has been in my living room and my home for many years too.
You traded. You gave the Adamant drawing for something of mine.
So I have a few of her drawings actually, because she also sent me a little drawing was, and so it's something that, you know, has resonated for me always. And I just think, you know, she has this very recognizable sort of approach to the work. Every time I see her work, you know, I find it incredibly compelling and moving. And so she's been in the back of my mind, and part of the plan has always been that when given the right moment to do something, that we would. So it's fantastic, really exciting for us to be able to feature her this year, you know.
And Beatrice, we talked about, you know, some of, you know, the musical influences that are represented in your art, also pop culture. And I've noticed there's quite a bit of the, I guess, the macabre in there, too. You know, Bela Lugosi, famous for playing, you know, those Dracula-like characters, the zombies. And I even noticed in one of your works, I haven't been able to spend a whole lot of time in there, that included the zombies. There was a scene with, like, palm trees, and it got me thinking about sort of the whole origins of the entire zombie genre and how it kind of originated from the Caribbean and Haiti and places. And it seems like you know quite a bit about it, because it's reflected in your work.
I think it was maybe in the early to mid 2000s, I went through like a really big zombie phase where I had to see all the zombie movies and have them all on DVD. And I did a whole series that's related to this narrative, for sure, that's part of the narrative, where because of magic powers and Adamant and Gary Numan becoming Planet of the Apes guys, and being that curse that Sudisu put on them, getting removed the dead rose in Paris, and they started like eating people's necks. So I did a lot of like really pretty graphic, like gory, but in black and white, so they didn't look so gory. Drawings. I'm kind of out of my zombie phase now. You know, like it just doesn't make any sense. Like, you know, you have rigor mortis and stuff. Like it's a little bit too far.
I love it. It doesn't make sense.
I mean, I can get down with like the force and stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, did you notice there's a lot of Star Trek and Star Wars stuff too, influence?
Yes.
Yeah, I love also.
We've got Lieutenant Worf right here mixing records on your shirt.
Yeah, I'm more of the original series kind of gal, but I like all Trek.
Okay.
And all Wars.
What would you say is maybe your big influence for what you're producing now, if you had to put some kind of...
Gosh, the last year has been pretty crazy, because I had, like, there was, for a while, was all about, like, the original 1971 Snow White Scary Adventures ride from the Magic Kingdom in Orlando that was designed by Rolly Crump, I think, and he was crazy, and it was, like, a terrifying scare fest. The witch came out, like, there was no music, and it was just like... Like, you know, like over and over again. And like, I have like a memory of going on that with like my dad, and I was crying, and we had to go on it again so he could pretend to kill her and every, you know, so I would calm down. And apparently my mom said that I had to be with him, that I was like, only dad is strong enough to defeat the witch. So for a while I was on that. And then like, I got back into Castle Grayskull being like sort of a mystical like place of, you know, power and stuff, which I've done before in my work, like talking about Churchill's and whatnot.
Were you young enough to have had the He-Man action
figures? No, I'm actually, I was past the time to be, I was already listening to music and MTV, but I always liked Castle Grayskull and Skeletor, and now I'm all about it, and I have a bunch of action figures and stuff. And I have two Castle Grayskulls. So I was doing that for a while. Then I got really back into Tiki for a few months, and I did all these like volcano drawings. And then September came, and like every year, September, October, I go crazy, and everything is Halloween. Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. And as soon as Halloween is over, it's like Christmas time, and it's like all Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars. Okay. So like this year, that's what's been going on with my head this year.
All right. Actually, you did explain something for me, because one of my questions was like, I see the Disney influence, but I don't see how it comes together with the more macabre stuff. But now I do. Disney was kind of like classic Disney was kind of scary.
Yeah. That ride was terrifying. They had to dumb it down, take out some of the scenes, put Snow White in, put some music, and call it Snow White's Scary Adventures. And it was less scary. And they ended up pulling it out anyway, because it was really scary. It was like a mean trick. Like, I've heard it, like a lot of people have like done podcasts about it and stuff. It was a crazy ride. It was a mean trick, because it's in Fantasyland, which is the little kiddie rides. So.
Well, switching gears a little bit, I'm wondering, you know, being a musician and a visual artist, how how you contrast the two. And by that I mean, like, where do you go when you're performing music as opposed to where you go when you're creating a visual piece?
There's two big differences, like with music, unless it's like a solo thing, which, you know, there's those things too, but with music you have to collaborate, so you have to, you know, negotiate stuff and have relationships with people, and more often than not, you know that you're going to be doing the thing in front of other people, so you're trying to, like, get it right and get it so right that you're not going to mess up when you're in front of people. Whereas, like, art making, I think, is really private. You don't actually want anyone around, and you don't have to collaborate with anyone. It's, you know, it's just you. And you don't have to show somebody what it looks like to be creating it. It's like you're just showing the record or something. Like, here's, you know, the record of the work, not the actual, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah. And I know there's an aspect of your interest and activity in creating zines that's included in this exhibition as well.
Well, I think of zines and flyers and anything like that to be like just the same as art making, but like there's like more copies of it. Like it's a high edition, so it can either be like inexpensive or free, you know, to give out. So it's more like egalitarian. It's more like for the people, like of the people, for the people.
All right, excellent. Yeah, actually, the first, I think, zine library in the Fort Myers area just recently opened up. So I'm going to make sure to get some of your stuff to stock it up before I go.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right. All right. I'm curious about the title for the exhibition as well and how you've decided to go for vacation. I mean, obviously, I know what it's a reference to.
It's all I ever wanted, right?
Oh my God, segue. So Kathy Valentine, who's obviously the bassist of the Go-Go's, is coming out with her memoir in 2 months, and it's called All I Ever Wanted.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, because she wrote Vacation, right? So it's a little aside.
Oh, and there's a documentary.
Yeah, the Go-Go's just have a documentary that came out on, it's on Sundance, got accepted to Sundance.
It's coming out at the Sundance Festival in 2 weeks. It's premiering there.
Oh, right. Yeah. Excellent.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I want to see it.
That was Miami-based artist and musician Beatriz Montevaro, Bob Rauschenberg Gallery director Jade Dellinger, and founding member and rhythm guitarist of the iconic all-women new wave band The Go-Go's. A retrospective exhibition of Montevaro's work, titled Beatriz Montevaro Vacation, opens tonight at the Rauschenberg Gallery at Florida Southwestern State College in Fort Myers, and tonight's opening reception will include a very special treat: a live music performance by Montevaro and Jade Wheedland herself. Tonight's free opening reception runs from 6 to 8, and the exhibition will run through March 28th. For more information, visit rauschenberggallery.com. That's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed a portion of this or any edition of the show, you can listen to all of our episodes in full on our website, wgcu.org/gcl, or you can subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by our director, Richard Chinqui, and yours truly. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Life is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.